Well, the NFL draft in 2025 has come and gone, and that means that we have some more former FCS talent making its way to the NFL, trying to make rosters and of course, create their own legacies in professional football. We've also got some movement in the FCS level as well, so we're going to our main man, the host of FCS Nation, and Kevin Marshall. Kevin, haven't talked to you at least interview-wise since really the FCS championship game where you saw NDSU take down Montana State. How are you doing, and what has life been like trying to be a bobblehead and make sure you get all these guys in the right places?
Well, it's been a pretty tumultuous offseason so far, right? I mean, a lot of big news, a lot of big things happening. The draft was outstanding. I mean, look, the numbers may not be where we wanted them to be as far as number of draft picks that finished at FCS school, because there is some contention, right? If you play 4 years at an FCS and transfer as a grad student, in my mind, you're an FCS product, right? Mm-hmm. A four-year degree trumps one semester in grad school.
Mm-hmm.
But the NFL don't see it that way. They'll call you by your grad school team when they draft you, which I understand it may be the last place you played for, but you know that's a little bit of a bone of contention with me. But how about another NDSU lineman going? David Walker from Central Arkansas going. Tommy Malott, Cam Miller getting drafted. So, look, it's like a whole new era in FCS this year. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, and, of course, Gray Zabel, the All-American offensive lineman from the Bison. Believe it or not, Kevin, I mean, this is just bananas to even think about, but the starting left tackle for the Bison, the last six of them have been NFL draft picks. Now, they've moved around, of course, and played left tackle, right tackle, interior offensive line, whether you look at guys like Cody Mauch or different guys of those sorts, Billy Turner, whoever else, you know, the other handful of guys that have played that spot. But specifically, Gray did something or was a part of something that none of those other guys for the Bison were, and that was Alex's lemonade stand. So for you and Stone and that entire crew and that entire force, really, what does it mean for you guys to be able to see a guy like that walk across the podium, even though he was at home, and be able to be an NFL first-round pick like that?
Well, we know that NDSU is going to raise a whole lot more money, we hope, right, mm-hmm. than they have. You can't quit letting South Dakota State win that thing, right? You can't have that. And USD win it for raising the most money for Alex's Lemonade Stand. That's been our two winners the 2 years that we've done it. We'd love to see NDSU step up a little bit in that. And David Walker from Central Arkansas was also a draft pick. So an initiative that we started 2 years ago has two guys from this last draft to hear their names called, and that's pretty darn cool, especially with Gray Zabel being the 18th pick overall in the first round. Like, when we sat around and talked about doing this, along with our partners, Northwestern Mutual, you know, we thought, let's get some good players. But it was mostly, you know, we wanted fan favorites, because the idea is to raise money for the kids that have cancer. And the fan favorites equal the best players. And look, we have two guys who are playing NFL football right now who were part of our initiative, and we couldn't be more happy about it.
Additionally, another question I'm curious about your thoughts on. You've had a chance a handful of times to watch him play in person, same with Jason and I as well, but you have the quarterback from Montana State, Tommy Malott, going 213 overall to the Las Vegas Raiders. He might play wide receiver, but that's beside the point. When two picks later, the Raiders go and take Cam Miller, the quarterback from North Dakota State. How do you think that first rookie minicamp day went between Tommy and Cam, knowing the battles they've had over the last half a decade or so?
I'm going to tell you this. If Cam Miller completes a pass to Tommy Malott in the preseason, FCS Twitter is just going to have a heart attack. No offense, Jace.
I don't want
you to have another one. But so Jace, you're not allowed to watch that.
Okay, I'll try not to.
Okay, good. But that's just a huge deal. And look, anybody who bets against Tommy Malott is a fool, right? I mean, that kid is just – there's something about him. And Cam Miller, too. Look, 2 years ago, if you'd have told me and Labanowitz or anybody, really, that had eyes that Cam Miller was going to be an NFL draft pick, they'd have taken you someplace to have your head examined, right? I think we can all agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have never seen a quarterback in a couple of years make such a dramatic improvement in his game. I mean, it's like night and day. I mean, no, it's not like night and day. There's not a – I can't describe how much better and how much work he put in to get better in two seasons than what Cam Miller's done. I mean, there's just no comparison to who he was in that Incarnate Word game when he couldn't throw the ball at all in the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you go from that to a draft pick, it's amazing. And that kid deserves so much credit. NDSU brought in how many FBS ringers to try to take his job over the years? A few, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the era where, oh, it's hard, I'm going to quit and transfer, there was none of that in Cam Miller. He stayed there. And every person they brought in there to take his job, he didn't whine, he didn't complain, he didn't leave. He whipped their butt and kept his job. I admired the heck out of that kid. And Tommy Mellott, I don't care what position you put him at. You put him on the offensive line, and that kid will battle his guts out for you for four quarters. And Raiders fans going to love those two young men. I think Mellott probably gets on the field first. Right, they're going to have him return kicks, return punts, which he did earlier in his career at Montana State, and also play in the slot. I think we have a good chance of seeing the next Julian Edelman in the NFL, college quarterback turned slot receiver turned all-pro type player. I wouldn't bet against Tommy Mellott.
Now, Kevin, the couple other guys you mentioned kind of at the top of the FCS draft list this year, Charles Grant, offensive line from William & Mary, also got drafted by the Raiders. And then David Walker, an edge rusher from Central Arkansas, got taken by my Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Can you tell me a little bit more about those two players and what you expect to see of them in the NFL?
Grant's a good player. His grades were really high. And, look, he played for William & Mary. So not a lot of people know about it because it's impossible almost to watch a William & Mary game because slow sports is so terrible, right? And, well, guess what? Not going to have that problem anymore, which we're going to talk about in a second, I hope. But he's a really good player, graded out very well. Look, the footwork is there for him. He needs to develop a little upper body, but all the measurables are there. And David Walker is a stud, man. That guy just changes the game. And he's kind of a tweener, right? He's probably not fast enough to play linebacker and maybe not quite big enough to be an edge rusher in the league yet. But they'll put some poundage on him, and he's just so quick off the start that David Walker's going to have a pretty successful and long career, I do believe.
So since Jason had beat me to the punchline with Charles Grant going to William & Mary, being a member of that tribe, there's a little bit of movement within the CAA, teams coming, teams going, things of those sorts. What is going on with William & Mary? What's going on with the CAA at this point?
Well, look, the CAA is an entity that it's just not what it was recently. And that's being kind, I think. Richmond and William & Mary have now both bolted to the Patriot League. The SoCon would have liked to have had them, and I'm pretty sure that the SoCon did offer them to come for football only. But most of their student body comes from the northeastern section of the country, so it makes sense for them to wave the flag up in Yankee land, right, rather than down further south where they don't get a whole lot of students anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But this has happened before to both of these schools. And a little bit of a history lesson. When William & Mary and Richmond were in the SoCon, they had been in it for 40 years. And then in 1976, SoCon admitted some teams that didn't feel like William & Mary and Richmond had anything in common with. So what did they do? They bolted. Well, fast forward to 2025. The CAA is having to replace some members, and they invite some teams that Richmond and William & Mary feel like they don't have anything in common with. So what do? They bolt for the Patriot League. There's nothing new, y'all. It's just history just keeps repeating itself and rhyming. So with William & Mary and Richmond going to the Patriot League, that makes the Patriot League a multiple bid league, the honest way, not just because your commissioner is the chairman of the playoff committee and you put two teams in there like they did a couple years ago. Right? You're talking about Holy Cross. You're talking about Lehigh, who was pretty good last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Richmond and William & Mary. That's pretty good top four there in that league. The Patriot League has been revitalized. And there are rumors that Villanova may follow Richmond and William & Mary to the Patriot League. Don't be surprised if that happens. How soon that will be, I don't know. But I just don't see how people in the CAA can keep their jobs. They've lost the four best football programs in that league in recent years, and they'll hold a press conference. And look, man, when you hear this guy tell you that everything's fine, I mean, it would make the Iraqi defense minister blush with having to tell you that. Oh no, the Americans are not out, are not 1 mile outside of Baghdad, right? Y'all remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It's ludicrous. That league is definitely on the downswing. Now, we'll see, me being a SoCon homer, we'll see if we'll hear the same things out of other people who cover FCS football that they said about the SoCon when Appalachian and Georgia Southern left. Well, it's not the same league anymore. You can't keep putting multiple teams in from that. I mean, the fact that they faltered on their face the last 2 years in the playoffs and your best teams are all gone now, the CAA, it's a dying entity, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't see how a lot of people there at that league office can keep their jobs. It's not the same league it was just 2 years ago.
Well, Kevin, when you talk about the potential of Villanova leaving, and I look at last year's standings in the conference, I mean, based on just geography, do you think that maybe they're, you know, if the CAA continues trending downward, teams like, you know, Rhode Island, Delaware, New Hampshire, Maine, et cetera, bolt for the Patriot League as well?
I don't think so, because then you just have the Patriot League being the CAA again. Too many teams. I think you might see some of those teams leave the CAA and form their own league, maybe.
Mm, okay.
Right? A nine-team league or an eight-team league. But I think that would probably be more in keeping with what those schools want to do. Like another Yankee conference, right, mm-hmm. for those who have been following FCS for a long time. Maybe you'll see that with maybe a couple of NEC schools thrown in, right? But, I mean, who's going to win the CAA this year is what I'm thinking about. And, you know, look, Stony Brook had a really good year last year but didn't make the playoffs. Richmond is now in the Patriot League. They have a huge game in week one, right? I mean, a huge game. And then you have William and Mary with their swan song in CAA football. The world is changing, and things that used to take a long time now happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But FCS football has changed, especially in the northeastern section of the country. The Patriot is now a better league, maybe the best league in the Northeast in FCS.
I want to go back to the draft portion of what we were talking about. When you look at guys like Gray Zabel, Kim Miller, Tommy Malott, Junior Bergen, all high-level names that were drafted here in the last month or two, over the last 5 years, well, they say since that COVID, right, season that hit, that was all kind of weird and wonky, right? The 2021 draft saw five FCS players drafted. Then from 22 to 2025, you had 20 players, you had 10, 11, and now this year you had 8 players drafted. I know that there were immense amounts that got undrafted free agent deals, that got rookie minicamp invites, things of those sorts. You had mentioned as well, you have your thoughts on guys if they played 1 year of FBS or Power 5, whatever kind of football you want to call it, versus FCS at this point. Where are we at when it comes to opportunities at the next level playing professional football for FCS players specifically?
All right. Well, look, it depends upon what you want to get out of your first few years of college, right? Because we all know right now we have guys transferring from the FCS level to the FBS level who know their playing time is going to get cut just so that they can make a little bit of money. And that's kind of just foreign thinking to me, because you want to play football, right? You don't want to. And if you're going to have a shot at Sunday football, you need as much film as you can get. But we have guys who are like, look, I'm probably not going to play in the NFL, but I'm good enough to transfer up a level and make a little money my last year. Okay, I'm not going to begrudge you of that. Go make your money if that's what you want. But I think at this time now, you've got to try to instill in these guys when you recruit them and you sign them that the light at the end of the tunnel of a degree from your school is worth not going up to the next level. And I would think that's what coaches are trying to do. I think that's when, if you're NDSU, you bring in the Gray Zables of the world, the Cam Millers, the Carson Wentz, the Cody Mount, right? And say, you can get there from here. Look at me. It's not that difficult. If you're good enough, you can get there from here. So you've got to try to keep these guys loyal to the coach, loyal to the school. And it's just everything has changed just so much. But I do think, look, you said we had 8 guys picked. Well, Furman had 2 in the 7th round, but they transferred as graduate students to someplace else. So, you know, that number could have been 10. It could have been 12. You know, it just depends upon how you want to count them. The dynamic has changed so much with the portal. I just think that if you can keep your guys for a long period of time, you're going to be successful. And, Jace, you remember when we would talk about off-air and on-air when a guy would bring in 30 transfers, and it would be like, wow, you know, if he can get – got a lot of talent, but if he can get these guys to play together as one team, maybe this coach has something.
Yep.
How often did that really work out for him in a positive?
Quite not. Honestly, it doesn't, because you see that more so in the college basketball game. You bring in these guys who are going to go to school for 1 year, and it takes a while to bring up that chemistry as compared to mid-major squads that have been together for 4 years. We're seeing it here, obviously, in the Summit League for basketball / Missouri Valley Football Conference for football, and obviously here at the school we cover, Division II MSUM, because I know that my alma mater lost three of their starting offensive linemen to bigger schools, and so I guess the question is that in general terms, is this overall, because I don't particularly think it is this overall good for college sports? Because now we've got guys leaving for 6- and 7-figure deals to go play at a bigger school, and it just feels like every level down, you go from the Power 5 to the Group of 5, you go from the Group of 5 to FCS, you go from FCS down to Division 2. They're just kind of cannibalizing each other, and as soon as you get a good team together, then you got to worry about these guys leaving. I mean, we've got just a fantastic quarterback at MSUM, and he's been lucky enough to have him here for all 4 years, but we saw this year personally, we saw half the roster from the men's basketball team go with the coach, which I understand going with the coach, but they're all going out to Denver to play D1 basketball. So it just seems like you can't really sustain a program in this day and age based on the NIL and the transfer portal.
Well, you're right, and it's difficult, and that's why you have to show these guys, look, this is a special place. This place is different than all other places, even though it really may not be special or different. But that's what you have to sell. That's the sizzle you got to sell, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about coaches who were bringing in 30 transfers, it rarely worked out for them in the old transfer portal era in FCS, right? But now that's going to be like everybody's thing every year, it seems like, from here on out. Because you're going to lose your best players who are going to move to FBS, and you're going to be recruiting probably the best of Division II and the best of other teams at your level who may look at your program as a step up from where they were. So the guy who can take a whole bunch of people who have disparate reasons as to why they're there, some are holdovers, some can't get out because nobody wanted them and they can't move up, some are just real happy to be there because it's a better opportunity than what they had. A guy who's a head coach and assistant coaches who can make all those guys fight for one thing, that team is going to be a guy who's going to be real successful. That's hard to do. Like we said, how many times did we see people in FCS bring in 20, 25 transfers? And rarely did we talk about those teams with all those FCS transfers doing much of anything in the playoffs once the regular season was over. So this is going to be a really interesting thing, man. I think you're going to have guys who maybe are going to have seasons at programs that we aren't used to seeing, right? And I think that's good for FCS. We need some new blood at the top. I know that Bison and Jackrabbit fans are like, no, we don't. We're real happy with it at the top. But for the rest of the subdivision, we need that. And, you know, keep us involved a little bit. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that it's going to be really nice to see some people that I know and see people who have no idea what it is they're about to walk into at high noon kickoff local time in Charleston, South Carolina on August 30th, who are going to say things like, boy, you betcha, it's really humid out here, you know? So that's going to be a really, really interesting deal, man.
Oh, oofta, don't you know?
Oh, boy. You better have some hot dish ready, eh? So I want to play a little devil's advocate. I had mentioned and asked you about your thoughts on where we're at as a subdivision, knowing that a lot of guys weren't considered FCS guys when they were drafted this year because they went up to FBS schools. Jace had just asked the question as well about guys just moving up and the talent you have in the subdivision. But at the same point, you guys had also were talking transfers. With how frantic the transferring is in today's day and age, how many names get put in the portal How beneficial, if at all, or how much talent do you think is going to come from the trickle-down effect, basically from FBS kids that are now not going to have that opportunity because of roster cuts? They're going to end up having to come back to FCS. Same thing, FCS, then a couple kids are going to trickle down to Division II, I would imagine. Where, if anything, do you see that benefiting the subdivision at this point?
Look, I don't think the players have ever been better than they are right now. And I've been following FCS 1AA for a long, long time, guys, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the talent's ever been better than it is right now. I mean, even the guy, yeah, you lose a guy to the FBS team. Well, there's another guy there who's ecstatic about that because he gets to show what he can do. And it also allows the best of the Division II guys to come up and play Division I football. And look, we all know this, right? That there's a lot of lap over between the bottom half of FBS and the top half of FCS. And the bottom half of FCS and the top half of Division II, there are guys that can play there. There are guys at NAIA schools or Division III schools that can play FCS football, but for whatever reason, they never got the opportunity. Well, yes, it's really strange to talk about more opportunities when there's less roster space. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But because of the movement, there's going to be more opportunity for guys to prove what they can do at the D1 level. And I like that. I'm glad of that. And you would think people who know me, and y'all know me pretty well after doing this all these years, and Jace working, and Jace and I working together on our show for all those years. But, you know, I'm not an old man yells at clouds. Just because I'm Southern doesn't mean I see a change.
You
right?
do you yell know, at people I, get I, off I, your lawn, though.
Well, look, just because, like I said, just because I'm Southern doesn't mean that I feel change. It just means that I don't like it. It doesn't mean that I fear it, right? So, you know, you have, this is different, and I don't particularly care for it, but it is what it is, man. You know, this is what people said they wanted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the NCAA has kind of set back and said, well, this is what you said you wanted, wasn't it? But this isn't exactly what the people said they wanted. There's got to be some guardrails, mm-hmm. I think. And maybe we'll see that with this house settlement. Maybe. I don't know. But this model that we have right now seems pretty unsustainable to me. But we'll see what happens in the future. I just don't know. It's aren't we rooting for just laundry right now, pretty much?
Pretty much.
Right? I mean, the days of, well, we signed this kid. Man, he's working out real hard in the weight room. You should have seen him from the beginning of his freshman season to the end of it. And then he plays a little bit as a sophomore, plays more, maybe starts as a junior, starts as a senior. You know, maybe you don't see that very much anymore. You know, you follow a kid along his whole career, unless you're willing to follow him along his whole career at several different stops.
And last thing I have for you today, Kevin, in closing, I understand that we're in May at this point, but we're going to blink. It's going to be the 4th of July. We're going to blink again, and it's going to be the 30th of August. What is that first bit of taste of what's going to happen down in Charleston do you want to give to Bison Nation that's listening to this?
Look, this is going to be a very interesting ball game, and just because, you know, when you're talking about schools that have a lot of movement and the institution and the coach needs to instill that the light at the end of the tunnel is worth the struggle, well, that's not anything new for the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina, y'all. That's what the whole thing is about, that it really sucks, right, the first year there. It's no fun. But that saying at the end is worth what you go through when you suffer that. So, but as far as the football game goes, Maurice Drayton is a very competent head coach. He has a very competent staff. We're not going to match up extremely well, man for man, with the North Dakota State Bison, but that's not going to matter a pinch of owl dung to them boys in Citadel blue and white. I might tell you that. They don't match up very well with anybody they play in football physically most days, but they have some players. We have a scheme. And we're going to come right at you over and 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 over again. And we think that in the fourth quarter, that heat, that humidity, the fact that they go to the Citadel, which makes them tougher than most in their mind, my mind too, I might say, that you have an opportunity in the fourth quarter in a one-score game, a 10-point game, with honor will prevail. And you know what? Don't be surprised when that's a close game. And I will say this about those boys. If they have you on the rope the way ETSU did, don't look for them to choke it away like those Inland Pirates did in Johnson City last year. I mean, dude, there's a lot of things now. Don't get me started about how, you know, it was, you know, NDSU championship run. You know what? You don't have a miracle in Johnson City, you don't win the national championship. You don't. Right? You don't.
Yeah.
Oh, way to fire up the fan base 3 months before the opener.
I mean, you know, all I can say is, you know, give them hell, Citadel. How about that?
Awesome. Thanks, Kev. We always appreciate the time. We're looking forward to catching up with you again soon once the season gets a little bit closer.
Appreciate you, boys. Good to talk to you, Jace.
Yep, good to talk to you.
Big Game James, nephew of Paul McCartney.